Yes, George Heffernan will be speaking next, and the title of his talk is Why Did Marceau Kill the Arab? A Study in the Absurdity of Moral Motivation. George, you have the floor.
Thank you. I think I'm unmuted, right? Yep, good. Yeah, I'm going to do some screen sharing. I hope this works. And I'm going to go right in and put my paper up. Uh-oh, let's see. Doesn't look like it's working at my end. Ah, I've got something here. Hang on. That's The Stranger, the text. That's 2020, 2021. Does everyone see it? Yeah, good. Okay. So those of you, now it's 11:34, so I'll try to, you know, format or keep this within the framework of a half an hour, at least the talking time, because the reason I tried to get it in a semi-finished form is because I'm looking for feedback, of course. And those of you who were here last year will recognize this as the prose version of what was back then a skeleton, right? It was just basically just talking points. So there's a little bit of overlapping, but not much. And I'm pretty sure that I won't be able to read very much of this, so I'm going to skip some passages as we go down, right? The abstract, I begin here with a question, of course, why did Marceau kill the Arab? A study in the absurdity of moral motivation. I'll explain a little bit about the title as we go forward. The abstract, I'll read, okay? In Camus' novel, The Stranger, the main character, Marceau, shoots and kills an Arab in an encounter by the sea. During his interrogation, the examining magistrate repeatedly asks Marceau why he first fired one shot at the Arab, then paused for a short time, and finally fired the second, third, fourth, and fifth shots at the motionless body lying on the beach. Marceau has no answer to the magistrate's question. Rather, he thinks that the magistrate is wrong to focus on it because it really does not matter. Yet Marceau learns at his trial that his pause is crucial because it makes all the difference between a legal case of self-defense and one of premeditated murder, as well as has profound moral implications and existential consequences. This paper examines several here is an understatement. You'll see down below that there are about 12 or 13, I'm just throwing them out there, several plausible answers to the question of why Marceau not only shot but also killed the Arab, and explores the roles of rationality and absurdity in his moral motivation. The tone-setting quotation, by the way, of the paper is Augustine's question from Confessions 2:5-11, as to why a man would kill another man. And Augustine is coming at the question also from the standpoint of the question concerning moral motivation. And Augustine poses the rhetorical question, well, you know, who would believe that one person would kill another person for no good reason, right? Sine causa. Right, and the connotation here is that the causa, the reason, has to be somehow sufficient, right? It can't be flimsy or whimsical or arbitrary. So here, introduction. Paper has five parts, right? And you'll notice that there are no footnotes in the paper. There are no notes at all. And I'm proud of that, and I'll show you why. Paging down to the literature at the end, of which I actually make use, although not very directly. This is toward the end under literature, right? This paper, The Present Study of the Stranger, is intended to represent a reflective reading of the novel, not a research paper on it. Therefore, I have refrained from the use of notes. All references to the text are easy to find for those readers who have studied it. I wish to note, however, that I have found the works of David Carroll, Alice Kaplan, English Showalter, and of course, above all, Kamal Daoud, especially helpful in gathering and expressing my thoughts on why Marceau killed the Arab. So back to the top. In other words, that's a kind of in advance justification for the apparent lack of documentation. Introduction. Why? Five times did Marceau shoot and kill the Arab? In Camus' novel, The Stranger, the main character shoots and kills the Arab. We never find out the name of this person, of course, who remains nameless in an encounter by the sea. He performs this act under clear circumstances, but for unclear reasons. At his interrogation, Marceau, who has fired a total of 5 shots at and into his victim, tells the examining magistrate that he thinks that his case is pretty simple. The inquisitive magistrate informs Marceau, however, that there is one thing, well, after having told Marceau that he doesn't understand very much about the law, that there is one thing that he cannot understand about his case, namely, why he first fired one shot at the Arab, then paused for a short time, and finally fired the second, third, fourth, and fifth shots into the body that was lying motionless on the beach. The magistrate asks Marceau, why did you pause between the first and second shot? He repeats the question, why? Why did you shoot at a body that was on the ground? He repeats it again and again. Why? You must tell me why. The 5 pourquoi's that the magistrate directs at Marceau echo the 5 shots that Marceau fired at and into the Arab. But again and again, Marceau has no answer to the magistrate's question. To the contrary, and this is maybe even more remarkable than the fact that he doesn't have an answer. To the contrary, Marceau thinks that the magistrate is wrong to dwell on it because it really does not matter. Yet, as Marceau learns during the investigation of his crime, which seems to take about a year, by the way, right? It's not a very quick thing, according to the narrative. And in the course of his trial, the question concerning his pause really does matter because it makes all the difference between a simple case of self-defense and a complex case of premeditated murder. It also possesses profound moral implications and existential consequences for him and for others. Now, of course, to every text, there's a context, and Marceau's killing of the Arab occurs in the last chapter of the first part of the novel, and his interrogation by the examining magistrate takes place in the first chapter of the second part. And what I do in the next 2 paragraphs is I basically sketch the entire plot of the novel. The first paragraph at the top of the page here refers to the first part. The second paragraph refers to the second part. I'll skip those because we can surely assume that everyone's basically familiar with the basic moves in the novel. So that last paragraph there. Thus, the whole plot of The Stranger is framed by the main character's 3 encounters with death. The death of Marceau's mama and the death of his Arab serve as the book ends in part 1, and Marceau's own probable death looms large as the book's end in part 2. And by the way, I have the sense that the novel ends with like a kind of ellipse at the end, dot, dot, dot. We never really learn that Marceau is actually executed, right? That's kind of deliciously left open. He might still theoretically get the pardon that he's speculating on. Since Maman did not know the Arab and the Arab did not know Maman, Marceau's involvement in the death of the Arab constitutes the singular link between his mother's death and his impending demise in the form of his pending execution. This inextricable linkage prompts an examination of several plausible answers to the question of why Marceau not only shot but also killed the Arab. This examination is a means to the end of an exploration of the respective roles of rationality and absurdity in Marceau's moral motivation. Throughout, and this is my stipulation from the beginning, moral motivation is understood in the encompassing sense, and in the inclusive sense, beyond descriptive and normative, to include amoral and immoral motivation. In the end, it is not only about the apparently meaningless death of a human being, the Arab, but also about a genuinely meaningful life of the human being. Everyone knows, I think, that, and I'll get to this later, that Marceau makes a number of existentialist type assertions, especially in chapter 5 of part 2, about, for instance, everybody knows that life isn't worth living. Everybody's going to die at some point, and therefore it doesn't matter when and how you die. He makes statements like that that refer not only to him, but they are universal generalizations, right? Okay, 2, the structure of the incident in which Marceau shoots and kills the Arab. And my argument here is, and this is the, again, the prose version of the skeletal sketch that I delivered last year. The key to understanding the precise nature of Meursault's nuanced act of killing the Arab is apprehending the exact layout of the entire incident in terms of parts and whole. The intricately structured character of Meursault's shooting and killing of the Arab is evidenced by his original narrative in part one, chapter six, his deposition to the examining magistrate in part two, chapter one, and the presentations of the prosecutor in part two, chapters three and four. The incident, which involves a sequence of encounters and exchanges that are creatively crafted and carefully calibrated to a climax by Camus, takes place on a Sunday visit by Meursault and Marie, together with Meursault's pal Raymond at the beach bungalow of Raymond's friends, Masson and his wife. After an early lunch, Meursault, Raymond, and Masson go for a walk on the beach while Marie and Masson's wife clean up at the house. The entire incident involves three European Algerian men, two Arab Algerian men, three trips from the bungalow to the beach, and three encounters on the beach, as well as one killing of an Arab Algerian man by a European Algerian man. Since there are no other, let's say, living or surviving eyewitnesses to the actual crime in the precise sense, Meursault's own statements provide the primary evidence on the basis of which he is eventually convicted. The next paragraph talks about the horizon of the incident. It goes back to the letter, of course, that Meursault wrote for Raymond, and that's going to be a kind of a sub-narrative to the paper, because as the reason why, reason in quotation marks here, as the reason why Meursault wrote the letter, Meursault says, I wrote the letter because I had no reason not to write it and because I had no reason not to please Raymond, who asked me to write it. Now, I won't repeat, and because I think that everybody is sufficiently familiar with this, right? I won't repeat then the framework of the crime as it goes down in chapter six of part one, because I think that everyone is familiar with the, I basically just gave you a thumbnail sketch of the three encounters between the two groups of men on the beach. You'll see that paragraph there. One, that's the first encounter. You're talking about three versus two. Then on the second encounter, you're talking about two versus two. And on the third encounter, you have one versus one, all right? And then what you can see easily, I think, is that as the encounters take place, Meursault's level of involvement, it deepens, all right? Until the point where you have a confrontation between Meursault alone and the Arab alone on the third encounter at the beach. So, and here's where I want to get to the real core of my reading. Thus, according to the evidence of Meursault's own narrative, he experiences what may be described as three distinctly discernible, I'm calling them Hamlet moments. Whether that's a good characterization or not is something maybe you can help me decide. Three distinctly discernible Hamlet moments in his measured movements between the bungalow and the beach. So the hyper-reflective Hamlet contemplates the difference between the actual sorrows of life and the possible comforts of death. To be or not to be, that is the question, whether to or two, right? And we know that's Hamlet, Act 3, Scene 1. Now the hypo-reflective Meursault, however, he weighs other, and as it turns out, comparably ominous options to do or not to do. That is the question, whether to or two. Each one of his moments is pivotal insofar as it involves a choice, a decision, a judgment on his part. Individually and collectively, these moments are decisive in the determination of his motivation, that is, his intentionality in and responsibility for his crime. The lesson here is, and he learns this too late, is that contingencies have consequences. And I'll talk later on, further down in more detail, about the distinction, which is crucial, between what is called motivation and what is called intent, okay, especially in the legal sense, right? So the first Hamlet moment occurs on Meursault's second trip to the beach, shortly after he takes Raymond's gun from him. It is then, Meursault relates in his narrative, that he realizes that you could either shoot or not shoot. Thus, to shoot or not to shoot, that is the question. But Marceau does not have to decide at this point whether to shoot or not to shoot, because the Arabs, seeing the gun and the handoff, it's a pretty decisive moment when Marceau says, "Give me your gun," and Raymond gives him his gun, that is done in full view of the Arabs. And that lays the foundation for the reader inferring that on the third trip to the beach, the Arab who's lying there prone has every reason to think that Marceau has the gun, okay? At any rate, on this occasion, then he and Raymond turn around after the Arabs suddenly back away, and they return to the bungalow. And besides, Marceau has just cautioned Raymond not to shoot without what would amount to a justification, at least in his judgment. Right on that second trip to the beach with Raymond and Marceau together, Marceau actually intervenes to defuse the situation, right? He actually restrains Raymond. Raymond is looking for payback after having been humiliated and cut on the first trip to the beach. And Raymond basically wants to let the Arab have it just like that, right? So the second Hamlet moment occurs after Marceau's second trip from the bungalow to the beach and back. It is then, Marceau relates, that he vacillates between remaining at the bungalow and returning to the beach for the third time. Thus, to stay at the bungalow or to go to the beach, that is the question. Marceau thinks to himself that it amounts to the same thing. Right? That's what he tells the reader in his narrative, right? But as it turns out, it does not amount to the same thing. A minute later, however, Marceau turns back toward the beach and starts walking as if it did amount to the same thing. The third Hamlet moment occurs when, on his third trip to the beach, Marceau alone encounters the Arab alone. Marceau relates that, seeing from a distance the rock, thinking of the cool spring behind it, which he's trying to reach, and seeing that Raymond's man has returned and is resting in the shade of the rock, it occurs to him that all he has to do is to turn around and that would be the end of it, right? Thus, to turn around or not to turn around, that is the question. But Marceau, we know, does not turn around. Rather, he advances toward the rock, the spring, and the Arab. This is all the more significant because, as it turns out, and as Marceau has told us in his narrative earlier in the detailed version that I skipped over, but you know it's there. And as Marceau will say at trial, he had gone back to the beach on the third trip, thinking that the whole affair had ended. And he did not intend to go back to the beach in order to kill the Arab. He didn't even think that he would encounter the Arab as he set off from the bungalow to go back to the beach on the third encounter. And I think we have no reason not to take him at his word, okay? Mm-hmm. So, therefore, a reasonable reader should conclude that, according to his own narrative, the only one that the readers have, at least until Haroun tells Musa's side of the story in Dawood's The Marceau Investigation, Marceau is deliberating, deciding, and acting in real time throughout, and his statements about his states of mind on the Sunday afternoon that he spent between the beach and the bungalow represent reflections about the past, but not projections back into it. That is, on the basis of all that he tells the readers, and even recognizing that his recollection may not be perfect, but rather only selective, which I think is a reasonable assumption in any case, a reasonable reader should conclude that all the evidence indicates that the glare and heat of the sun aside, and the accidents, contingencies, and happenstances beyond his control aside, Marceau was in adequate possession of presence of mind while he was going to the beach, returning to the bungalow, and returning to the beach and shooting and killing the Arab. Marceau says, of course, that he was surprised that the Arab too had returned, that as far as he was concerned, the whole thing was over and done with, and that he himself had returned without even thinking about it. What is decisive for the determination of his guilt or innocence, however, is not what Marceau thinks before he sees the Arab again, but what he does after that. The point is that even if Marceau did not return to the beach with the intention of killing the Arab, his killing him could nonetheless still be a case of premeditated murder, given the pause between his first shot and his subsequent shots. It is no wonder then that the examining magistrate insists that Marceau tell him why he fired the first shot at the Arab, then paused and finally fired the four subsequent shots into the body lying motionless on the beach. It is also no wonder that given these circumstances, the prosecutor argues that Marceau is guilty of premeditated murder. Indeed, even Merceau thinks that what the prosecutor says in this regard is plausible. That comes out very nicely in Merceau's narrative in chapter 4 of part 2, where you get basically the closing arguments, right, of the prosecution and the defense. There was, after all, no way for Merceau to have known that the first shot was fatal, and it may have been possible after that shot yet to save the Arab's life. In fact, even if the first shot was fatal, and it may well have been since it left the body lying motionless on the beach, the question still remains, why did Merceau shoot 4 more times into the dead body? Thus, regardless of whether the first shot was fatal or not, the examining magistrate is right to focus on the problem of why Merceau fired the first shot, then paused, and finally fired 4 more shots. In the end, there are 2 possibilities here. Either Merceau wanted callously to make sure that he had killed his band, or he wantonly vandalized the dead man's body. Neither scenario serves, I think, exactly to exculpate him. So in the next section, section 3, to be a little bit careful with the time, I suggest possible text imminent answers to the question concerning Merceau's motive. And as the paper progresses, and you can read this at leisure than today and tomorrow later, right? I basically argue that we're looking at the problem of overdeterminacy, opaqueness, and potential absurdity of moral motivation. In other words, the phenomenon is, I think, one that's familiar to most of us. In the case of many crimes, it is not possible for even the person who committed the crime afterwards, even upon lengthy reflection, to say exactly why they did what they did, all right? So with this in mind, then I, in this section, which is actually a prelude to the next section, I set forth a number of possibilities, and then motivating factors as to why Merceau killed the Arab. And I tie each one to a specific character in the novel. So I'm not putting ideas or thoughts into the heads of anyone. I'm just saying that there is a kind of prima facie associative process going on here. For instance, you know, the examining magistrate, right? It's easy to think that the man would think that, well, the reason that he did this is because Merceau is not a Christian who loves his neighbor, but rather a Monsieur Antichrist who hates or at least contemns his neighbor. The defense attorney, who's, you know, quite puzzled by the public defender, who's quite puzzled by the man he has to defend, because Merceau is insensitive to others and indifferent to the preservation of human life, especially the life of others, and, you know, even that of his own mama, right? The defense attorney is the one who sees that the prosecution is, the investigators are establishing close connections between Merceau's demeanor, his attitudes, his behavior at Maman's funeral and wake, and then his actions at the crime. Then the caretaker and the director of the home, Celeste and Raymond, you know, this kind of simple explanation, which is not an explanation, which is bad luck or chance or happenstance. Marie, for instance, right? What would Marie say, you know, if we really got to talk with her about why Merceau had done it? Well, maybe Merceau is a man without empathy who cannot love her, he cannot love himself, and he cannot love anyone for that matter. So he acts not exactly in his own best self-interest, right? The prosecutor is very clear. Well, Merceau is a stranger to his mother. He's a monster to society. He's a man without a soul whom the state must execute to preserve public morals, right? Merceau's infamous explanation, where he basically is asked to talk about his motive, and he doesn't talk about motivation, he talks about causation. So for him, it becomes a very physical kind of cosmological, or even, as I'll say in the next section, meteorological way of, you know, form of avoidance discourse, right? You know, the Arab, what would the Arab say, you know, if the Arab, you know, had been able to testify in his own cause, right? Well, Merceau overreacted to the Arab's own necessary act of self-defense, holding the knife up while lying in a prone position, with his own, Merceau's own unnecessary act of self-defense, right? Which was overwrought. the Arab sister Mama, for instance, right? Perhaps Marceau's repression and suppression of his grief at and guilt over her death in the old folks' home results in fatal anger directed against another human being. Then to round off that section and to, you know, touch base again with what the initial quote that set me off in this direction was, then a little bit of Augustine, right? And then Augustine's book two of the Confessions is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the seminal would be the word, right? One of the seminal studies of the opaqueness of moral motivation. And of course, Augustine can write about the opaqueness, and we would say, I think, also the absurdity, the murkiness of human moral motivation, because Augustine is a strong believer in the phenomenon of original sinfulness. He's actually the founding father of the concept of original sinfulness. In other words, Augustine is like reflecting on this incident that he, with his companions, engaged in when he was 16 years old, the trashing of the neighbor's pear tree, seems to be a relatively harmless form of evil doing. But set in context, Augustine, he ticks off a catalog of evil deeds that people have done and asks, you know, why they do the evil that they do. And Augustine, basically, his answer to the question concerning why so many people do the so many evil deeds that they do is that they don't need a reason. They don't need a sufficient reason to do them because they're originally fallen, corrupt, or depraved. They're originally sinful, and they just do it because that's their nature, all right? Now, of course, and so I put that in there because, of course, Camus was, and you can find this, I think, documented in his thesis, his dissertation, Christian Metaphysics and Neoplatonism. I took another look at it when I was putting this together, and I was struck by the fact that Camus talks there a great deal about Augustine on original sinfulness, and he seems to have at least a working knowledge of Augustine's thoughts on the topic. The section four is a little bit more philosophical because in section four, then I try to separate then the associations that I performed in section three. So I put there plausible philosophical positions on the question concerning Marceau's motive. And there I talk about the meteorological or cosmological answer, the legalistic answer, the psychological answer, the pathological answer, the absurdist answer, the nihilist answer, the existentialist answer. Possibilities five, six, and seven are quite interesting, right? The absurdist answer, because Marceau thinks that it does not matter whether he kills the Arab or not. Well, you know, he says, since everybody's going to die anyway, it doesn't matter when or how you die. And that would seem to be consistent with Marceau's general philosophy of life and death. The nihilist answer, because Marceau thinks that the Arab's life, like any life, is not worth living, right? This is an even more extreme variation on the absurdist answer. And then the existentialist answer, which I think is not a good answer, right? Because Marceau thinks that he hasn't to do something to realize his project. This is, I think, inconsistent with his general philosophy that nothing really matters. That seems to be his mantra, right? We can talk maybe later about, you know, the difference that Simon was talking about, the distinction between meaning and significance, because Marceau actually does use the French signifier quite often in his responses to people. When someone thinks something means something or has significance, Marceau's practically knee-jerk response is to say, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't signify anything, right? Look, you know, post-colonial answer, right? Because Marceau resents indigenous people and covets their country. He does possess racist attitudes towards and perform racist acts against Arabs. I talk about that below. But I think for me personally, the phenomenological answer seems to be the one that is most plausible. And that is because Marceau's actions are overdetermined by multiple causes. Multiple motives, if you like, multiple intents. And this appears to me to be the most plausible because the most encompassing answer. It's probably also the most unsatisfying answer because it's the one that actually reinforces my basic intuition about the opaqueness, the overdeterminacy of human moral motivation in general, but then Meursault's own particular motivation in this case. So here's five. This is basically an attempt at a summary, pulling everything together. Could maybe do this in under 5 minutes, right? If the search for a definite, sufficient reason why Meursault shot and killed the Arab is fraught or even futile, it is the main character of the novel who is responsible for the state of affairs. In this regard, it is philosophically noteworthy, and it is especially relevant for the many English-speaking readers of The Stranger, that in Anglo-American jurisprudence, the prosecution is not required to identify a motive for the commission of a crime. Of course, if the prosecution can do so, it may strengthen the case for the jury, as the prosecutor of the case against Meursault seems to think. However, it is not required to do so because, for valid reasons, criminal motive, understood as the reason why a person chooses to engage in criminal conduct, is not a part of the corpus delicti. The underlying justification is that many, if not most, criminals have no sufficient reason to commit their crimes. This is where Augustine, of course, was onto something, and he was talking about both crimes and sins, and that many, if not most, criminals themselves cannot adequately explain why they have done what they have done. Therefore, it would make no sense to impose the burden of proof on the prosecution to prove a motive, and beyond a reasonable doubt at that, for an act that is in many, if not most cases, irrational, that is absurd. Criminal motive is different from criminal intent, which understood as the state of mind in which a person engages in criminal conduct, for example, with malice aforethought or with the display of depraved indifference towards the preservation of life, plays a crucial role in the determination of degrees, grades, and levels of guilt and responsibility for an act. Thus, intentionality, as distinguished from motivation and causation, is the key to establishing guilt and its grades. These distinctions are crucial, of course. We're both, I think, at this point, we're all of us are waiting at this point for, especially Americans in the audience, are waiting for the verdicts in the cases of Kyle Rittenhouse, right? The shooter in the case in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the demonstrations in the wake of the serious wounding of Jacob Blake, but also then the Ahmaud Arbery case in Brunswick, Georgia, right? Okay. So at any rate, then the next paragraph I talk about The Stranger and the actual, that's the more detailed version of the explanation that Meursault gives of why he did what he did. And it's, he says, because of the sun. And obviously the court laughs at him. And Meursault has difficulty distinguishing between acts and events, right? The trigger did not give, he pulled it. The gun did not go off, he fired it. The Arab was not killed, he killed him. In fact, Meursault wanted to reach the spring behind the rock, and the Arab was blocking his way. Thus, Arab shot and killed the Arab, not only to escape the glaring heat of the sun, we've taken, you know, simply at his own words, but also to reach the cooling water of the spring. Then I say a little bit about what the sun and the spring symbolize, because I think the sun has been over-attended to, right, in the literature on The Stranger and its role in Meursault's participation in his mother's funeral, but also in the killing of the Arab. The language there in the French in the two scenes is almost verbatim the same. But I think that the spring has just as much significance, shall I say, as the sun does. So I think I can wrap this up by just reading a little bit from these last two paragraphs. It is difficult to avoid the conclusion that the reason, in quotation marks, why Meursault shoots and kills the Arab is because, in quotation marks, it is absurd. The philosophical lesson, again, in quotation marks, of The Stranger, unphilosophical as it is that the only way to live happily in an indifferent universe is to adopt an attitude of indifference towards everyone and everything in it. This is not, however, at least on my reading, that's not the philosophical lesson of The Stranger, well, the work, right, the novel. The unreflective natural indifference of Meursault has little or nothing to do with the reflective practiced attitude of ancient philosophers such as the Stoics, for example, who cultivated a deep sense of moral communitarianism, political cosmopolitanism, and cosmic providentialism. The last thing they believed was that the universe was somehow like absurd, right? So Merceau shot and killed the Arab not because he was trying to create a meaningful life in a meaningless world, or even to generate a little bit of meaning in a meaningless life in a meaningless world, but rather because he did not think that it made any difference whether he remained at the bungalow or returned to the beach, whether he shot or did not, whether he killed the Arab or not, and whether the Arab lived or died. As he says towards the end, everyone knows that life is not worth the trouble of having lived it. And since everyone is going to die, it is obvious that it does not matter when and how they do. But his lethal act did make a difference for the victim, for the perpetrator, and for the others. And even Merceau, who told his boss that people never change their lives, he realized that he had changed his life with his deed. He didn't go to Paris with Marie, he went to prison with Arabs. Yet what might be most philosophically alienating about Merceau, and therefore most strange about the stranger of the stranger, is not that he does not properly mourn his mother's passing, not that he writes the fateful letter to Raymond's mistress, not that he treats Marie insensitively, and not even that he shoots and kills the Arab. It is also not that he never finds an answer to the question why he did. It is rather that he is not interested in the question concerning his own motive. He does not seek and he does not find. And the very end, I say that has all been a very interesting exercise, but maybe the reason why Merceau isn't interested in the question concerning why he did what he did is that what Merceau is really interested in is just living a happy life on this earth. That's all, right? So on his narrative, he was happy before he shot the narrative. And on his narrative, he actually, in that final statement at the end of chapter 5 of part 2, he says, I'm happy again, right? And there's only one thing missing for his happiness to be fulfilled. We know what that is. But basically, he's claiming that he's happy again. He wants was happy and he's happy again. And I think he has to decide. That's probably the next most interesting paper, you know, about the stranger, the question, does Merceau die happily? All right. So, and I thank you for listening. So thank you. I think I'm a little bit over.
Thanks, George. That was excellent as always.
Yes. Thank you, George. Very well done.
Thank you.